Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Sports and energy drinks are extremely popular with kids and adolescents. However, the American Academy of Pediatrics warns energy drinks should be off limits and sports drinks used only when they really need them. Dr. Harold Katz joins 411 Teen to discuss sports and energy drinks and their impact on oral health. Dr. Katz is a dentist, bacteriologist, and a developer of oral health. He joins us from the West Coast. He's out in L.A. Dr. Katz, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yes. Sports and energy drinks, are they appropriate for kids and children? Do they pose a health risk? Let's talk about it. I know that sports and energy drinks can include anything from beverages to vitamin waters to highly caffeinated drinks. Tell us what's happening and where are we? Would you distinguish them and tell us about?
Well, when we define sports drinks, we're talking about the drinks which are used to replenish lost ions such as sodium and potassium when we're working out on a hot, sweaty day. They're actually developed in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're in Florida and I'm in California.
Right.
But they were developed because football players were practicing in the summer, sweating profusely. They're big guys to begin with. Plus, they're wearing all of that equipment and shoulder pads and helmets. So obviously, they're going to sweat, and the practices take several hours. That was, 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And today, sports drinks have become sort of the go-to liquid boost for young people because all their heroes are using these sports drinks, which are highly advertised. So right off the bat, I just want to make a real definitive statement. Young people do not need sports drinks unless they're exercising for over an hour in hot weather.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if they're very young, there's no way that they need them. It just doesn't apply to them. They're not losing sodium and potassium enough to warrant the use of those sports drinks.
So that's
right off the bat. Whether those sports drinks have sugar or the newer ones, which are sugar-free. The sugar ones are definitely horrible, very high in sugar. But when it comes to oral health, one of the things that are very important for parents to know is the high acid levels
mm-hmm.
in the sports drinks
mm-hmm.
because the acids are wearing away tooth enamel, gum tissue. Just basically you're creating an oral environment, which is the exact opposite of what we want. So sports drinks just are not necessary. Now, energy drinks are a little bit different by definition. The energy drinks contain caffeine in order to give you the boost. And you correctly said there is no room for energy drinks for young people. They don't need the caffeine. Their hearts can't take it. Besides the sugar and the acid levels in those energy drinks, just the caffeine itself, it's a triple header of bad things
mm-hmm.
for young people. So you are correct. Energy drinks, forget about it.
But why are they so appealing? You know, as far as the sports drinks, I have actually seen children as young as 6 and 7 drinking sports drinks, okay? I mean, I have definitely seen that. Maybe we need to talk about just listing some of the sports drinks so that listeners will be able to make a distinction. I mean, things like Gatorade, that's a sports drink.
Yeah, right. Gatorade.
Powerade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the two
mm-hmm.
Big brands. There are also vitamin water. I guess
yeah.
You call that a sports drink because who in the world would say vitamins are bad?
Right.
Just looking, I have right in front of me here an article from the American Dental Association, and they did a study last year, and they measured the pH level of these drinks. So we're just talking about the acids,
mm-hmm.
about the sugar,
mm-hmm.
and other components. Just from an acid point of view, the fact is, any pH, pH is, goes from 0 to 14. The lower the pH means the more acid, the higher acid level. 7 is neutral. That's what water is. So, and your mouth is slightly acidic. It's about a 6.4. So you want to keep it in that range, 6.4 to 7. Let me tell you the pH levels of Gatorade. Gatorade Orange, 2.99. Powerade White Cherry, 2.81. Vitamin Water Energy Tropical Citrus, 3.15. They are all acidic. They are all bad for your teeth, bad for gum tissue. And I can go on and on. There's another brand called Propel. That has a pH of 3.01. Sobe Life Water, that's a little bit better, 3.53. The problem is parents are very busy these days. Where do they get their information about what's healthy for the kids? On television. And you see your favorite athlete, you know, Hall of Famers, whatever the sport is, and they're promoting, hey, I use this energy drink. And you think, well, my kid's an athlete. You know, my daughter is going to be the next, Venus Williams. So go ahead, let's give her a sports drink. But yet you don't understand, it's not for children.
So just what you have said, just to encapsulate it, is that the sports drinks are used, yes, to replace the electrolytes and some, give us some energy after training maybe and during competition, although it sounds like there's some question really about their efficacy. You know,
correct.
Okay.
A lot of studies now show that the simplest way to replace the electrolytes, especially for children, I mean, it's so simple that anyone can do it, even a caveman, as they say. You drink plenty of water, eat a banana, that will replace the potassium, and applesauce will help to replace the sodium. And that's about it. You don't need anything more than that. First of all, you're going to save a ton of money, several hundred dollars a year, because everyone has those things in the refrigerator in their kitchen. But moreover, you're not introducing the sugar, the high amounts of sugar that are in these drinks, because as a parent, you're trying to be healthy, you buy the sports drink, but you don't want to give your kid an artificial sweetener, so you give them the one with the natural, which is the sugar, which causes the problems. In fact, on the internet today, as we speak, there's an article about how sugar affects, is negative for heart health. So there's so many things with excess amounts of sugar. Why would you give your child more sugar than they ever need? Give them some water, a banana, some applesauce, voila, you've solved the problem.
And so, and it, what you're saying is that, yes, everyone needs to be hydrated, but you don't have to have sports drinks to do that. That's what I hear you saying, in other words.
That's correct.
Okay.
The studies show you children do not lose enough moisture or electrolytes unless they're in extremely hot weather and exercising for over an hour. And even in today, that's a fairly brutal way to treat your child. School districts today don't even allow heavy exercise in hot weather.
Right.
Whether you're in Florida, California, or Alaska,
indeed,
you just don't do that.
You don't do
that.
That
doesn't happen.
Mm-mm. Now, what about these energy drinks? I mean, I know they have a lot of caffeine in them. That's really what gives them that energy. Some of them may have some B vitamins. They say that provides extra energy. Do they really increase energy? And why are they so appealing? They're very appealing also. Is it, again, Madison Avenue? I mean, is that what it is?
Exactly, Madison Avenue it is. The fact is we all want to have more energy. When we talk about energy, we're talking about feeling of wellness, feeling of wanting to do more. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're sitting at your desk, you feel a little exhausted. What does an adult do? Yeah, they usually have a cup of coffee to give them a boost until the end of the workday. But for a child, what's the simplest thing to do? Well, energy, there's a little 6-ounce drink that I can buy at the 7-Eleven, and my big brother's using it. He mixes it with alcohol, but I'm not going to have alcohol. I'm going to have the energy drink, and I'm going to fly. I'm going to have wings, as some of them say. The problem is young people's hearts can't take that excess caffeine. They're not designed for that. It's too much of a boost to get that rapid heart rate. Now, the problem is it does become addicting to get that feeling of energy, that feeling that your heart is beating fast. It's almost like a rush. And unfortunately for many children, we've seen many studies will show that it does become an addictive habit where they have to have the energy drink, and that leads them to, you know, horrible things later on. So, again, energy drinks, no matter if they have sugar or sugar-free, not for children. In fact, they're not even for adults, in my opinion, because people have enough caffeine in a cup of coffee or even in tea. Why add more caffeine to your diet?
Some of the side effects, if we could talk about them, of the energy drinks. I mean, I know, you know, you can have irregular heartbeats and high blood pressure, but those who are come addicted to it, they start to experience jitteriness or nervousness, and it goes on and on. So I wondered if you didn't mind talking about that a little bit. I know they have upset stomachs and headaches. You know, it goes, you know, ad nauseum, I guess, certain level, because it just everything.
Good point, because what happens over a period of time, you feel that the energy drink is wearing off, so you end up having multiple doses of the caffeine. It does give you the jitters, and I've seen in many cases where they will go to a physician, they're too embarrassed to tell them how many energy drinks they're having. Eventually, they have the jitters, and all of a sudden, they're on prescriptions for depression or anxiety, and all of a sudden they're down that unfortunate road of getting hooked on prescriptions. And from many, many cases that I've seen that have come to our office, you have people, young people, that are on prescription medications, Adderall, all sorts of medications which are not necessary, and many of it started from just using these energy drinks. So, again, it's a terrible road to start off with. If your child wants a little bit more energy, a little more, I guess, zing in the day, they can get a lot of the necessary vitamins from fruits, from vegetables, and just a well-balanced diet. But again, unfortunately, many parents are not home. The economy is not what it should be. Two parents are working. The child comes home alone, turns the TV on, and there's their favorite athlete or their favorite rock star. Hey, they're having an energy drink, they're having a Powerade, boom, they're off to the 7-Eleven and take care of it themselves.
And that indeed is the way it happens. You tuned in to 411 Teen. We are having a discussion with Dr. Harold Katz. We'll return very shortly. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. This hour, I am talking with Dr. Harold Katz. He's out on the West Coast, and he's sharing his expertise with us about these sports drinks and these energy drinks and the impact on oral health. Dr. Katz, I had to interrupt you. You didn't get to finish what you were saying. And I also wanted to ask you, as we look at these drinks, when can one safely use them? I mean, is there a particular age that you would recommend and say, okay, it's fine to use? And then once they use them, how much is safe?
Safety is that's a good question. I would say, in my opinion, from what I've seen, children from the age of 13 on can use a sports drink. Again, no energy drinks.
At all.
No teenagers should be using an energy drink. You don't need an energy drink unless you're 21 years old and you've been up all night and you've got to, you know, drive to, Atlanta or something like that. You've got to drive for 4 or 5 hours. Otherwise, forget about it. It's not necessary. However, when it comes to sports drinks, if you are an athlete, if you're out there, you are an athlete, you're on some sort of sports team, after a game, you've sweated a lot, or after practice, it would work. Again, one drink. There's no prescription for it, but that's the recommended amount. One drink only per day.
Okay.
Now, what I would also recommend, if you are going to have a sports drink, immediately after you have the sports drink, either rinse your mouth with water or drink a full glass of water. And the reason for that is they're very concentrated when it comes to the electrolytes. And mm-hmm. you want to wash out your system. Your body needs water. We use, just from saliva alone, you use up 1.5 liters of saliva a day. So children from the age of 13 to 18 should be drinking about 64 ounces of water per day. And by water, I mean water. I don't mean Powerade or Gatorade or chocolate milk. I mean water. Water is very precious for a number of points of view, but especially to replace saliva. Saliva, if I may sort of get on my kick here about how important saliva is, saliva keeps your mouth in balance, but it's also necessary for digestion. Adults who have a dry mouth don't have enough saliva to actually start the digestive process, because what the saliva does, it has enzymes which break down the food, so when it does get into your digestive system, it's more easily broken up by bacteria in your gut. So people who don't have enough liquid in their diet, mm-hmm. don't have enough saliva, and it causes a problem throughout the digestive process.
What about the high levels of caffeine that are seen in colas and coffee drinks? Should they, these seems like they should be off limits to kids too.
Oh boy, you brought up a very good point. But there is some good news. Just read in the Wall Street Journal today that sales mm-hmm. of caffeinated drinks continue to drop. They've been dropping every year for the past 20 years. So programs like yours are having an effect on the population. People are sort of listening that these caffeinated colas are bad. Now, what they're doing instead of having the carbonated caffeine drinks, they're going to the sports drinks, thinking that's a little bit healthier because they're not carbonated. They're all no good. because they all contain the same thing. A carbonated beverage will have high amounts of sugar, will have the caffeine, and will have a lot of the extra sodium. In fact, high sodium in the diet leads to a lot of high blood pressure among younger people, which is on the rise as well. It's almost like putting salt into your drink, the amount of sodium that's in many of the beverages. For older people, I would recommend drinking a lot of tea. Now, people always ask me why tea as opposed to having a soft drink. Tea has a lot of antioxidants in it, mm-hmm. which are great for oral health, great for the rest of your body. Coffee is always a problem, not only for the caffeine, but of the acid level. Coffee is extremely acidic, can end up giving you lots of bad breath. We all know what coffee breath is. There's no such thing as tea breath.
That's true.
About someone's tea breath.
That is true.
Certainly complain about the coffee breath. So as I always say to my patients, human beings are walking chemistry labs. Once you put something inside your mouth, there will be a reaction. Mm-hmm. We know that the sugar can end up leading to diabetes for younger people. We know that the acids can cause tooth decay, gum disease, and an imbalance inside the mouth and the throat. So again, if you're going to have a liquid, you know, not that I'm selling any water over here, but water is your best choice. Tea is your second best bet.
And also, it seems like if we encourage these drinks, that we're kind of going down a slippery slope, because we're sending the message that they need these drinks to enhance performance. And in turn, I mean, it could lead, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. It seems like it could lead to other use, okay?
Well, you know, athletes always want an advantage over the competition.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that in the Olympics, there's all these cases of drugging,
right.
Of right. steroids. Famous baseball players have been known to take drugs which can't be traced so they can become home run hitters. And kids watch this, and they
exactly.
think, well, so-and-so, you know, hit all these home runs, he took this. But if I'm young and I can take something that I can buy at the 7-Eleven or at Publix, that's okay. It's not a drug. It's going to give me a little more energy. I'll be able to run faster and hit the ball farther. It's a terrible message. And as time goes on, it's almost like telling your kid it's okay to cheat a little bit.
Yeah.
Hey, Joey or Mary, you're not quite good enough, but if you drink this drink or take these energy bars, you're going to be stronger. Now, let me just talk about energy bars
okay.
for a second here. It's almost the same thing. I went to a dietitian last year. I was trying to lose some weight, and I told her that I'm eating these energy bars. And she asked me, did you ever read the ingredients in a so-called energy bar? When you read the ingredients, and anything says the word energy, that means put on your reading glasses and read better, because an energy bar, just like an energy drink, is full of sugar. Sugar gives you energy. Sugar basically is a fuel that your body uses in order to create calories, which are the way we measure energy or in calories. The problem is when it comes to a child, and many adults too, you don't need those types of calories. You need calories coming from proteins, some other types of carbohydrates. But getting your energy calories from pure sugar in an energy drink or in an energy bar are wasted calories.
Wow. Madison Avenue is getting over.
Well,
I mean, really? You know, because
well, what's an unfortunate thing is, you know, children don't watch TV as much as they used to. They're on the internet or they're on their cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, if you were to do a search, a child is looking on the internet, Madison Avenue people have figured out a way to follow their child. If they're looking for an energy drink, they will be bombarded with advertisements for energy drinks, for sports drinks, for all sorts of things once they do that search. So it's almost inevitable they're going to be hounded by Madison Avenue wherever they go. They don't have to watch television.
Right, no.
They'll be hounded. It's on their cell phone.
Mm-hmm. What about the role of the school and school policy on these sports and energy drinks? For example, I know in Connecticut, Connecticut has passed legislation barring energy drinks and enhanced waters in the schools. And I just wonder, are you familiar with, you know, the position that states or school systems may take in regard to these drinks?
Well,
California is always a leader. What's happening out there?
Well, here in California, the same thing is happening. It used to be that there used to be vending machines in all the schools, which would have, you know, just junk food and sports drinks and all sorts of sodas. Very hard to find nowadays. Most of the vending machines have been removed. The cafeterias are now offering healthier food. But, you know, when school is over at 3:30, they're across the street at the convenience store, and they can buy whatever they want. And you can't stop them from doing it. Now, I'm a big proponent. I mean, when I went to school, we had what's called health class. And they taught us, you know, a little bit about the birds and the bees, reproduction. Everyone showed up for those classes. When it came to nutrition, no one paid attention. And I think today nutrition is at the top of the list. People just don't understand. And unfortunately, as I mentioned before, children are home alone. They'll have a bowl of cereal in the morning, which is full of sugar. I've even seen it myself. I've seen some children have a can of soda on the way to school in the morning because it has caffeine in it, and they need that zip because they've been up all night watching television or on the internet. So you need to educate them about what a healthy diet is. Now, there has to be some imaginative way of doing it without boring the children or just sort of yelling at them that you're eating things all wrong. And the school cafeterias have changed quite a bit here in California. I'm sure in Florida it's the same thing, where they're offering healthier things. But again, education, unfortunately, parents don't have the time to educate the children, so the schools may have to sort of implement healthy diets during the school day.
What about the role of Food and Drug Administration? Do they play a role in these drinks and the substances and the amounts that are in them?
That's an interesting question. I know that the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, they're very cognizant of the fact that many of the so-called, let's say, supplements out there may be used by children today. Now, a lot of the supplements, and I'm talking about not vitamins itself, but there are energy supplements that are advertised on television and on the radio that give you a boost. We're not talking about sports drinks or energy drinks, but pills and tablets. And again, we see a lot of the problems that some children are having in school are from taking too many of these so-called energy boosters, which are meant for adults, perhaps. So the FDA is trying to classify some of these as drugs and not so much as health supplements. Things that are health supplements just sort of fall into the gray area, mm-hmm. and people sort of get away with the marketing of them. But I know for a fact people who have worked for the FDA, they have a concerted effort trying to keep those types of supplements away from children because of the abuse. Children don't know what they're taking. They don't know the correct dosage, and problems arise.
Are there restrictions on purchasing these products, or can just anyone buy them?
Interesting. I don't think there's any restrictions. Mm-hmm. You know what? There used to be some of the... There was a drug out there called Primatene Mist that was for asthma sufferers, mm-hmm. And it has epinephrine in it, and I know that it is now behind the counter. Epinephrine basically makes your heart beat like crazy, and it's for asthma sufferers in order to, so they can breathe. Epinephrine helps asthma sufferers, but a lot of people were using it as an energy booster. They used to have a spray, an oral spray, which is no longer on the market, and that would give people extra energy, but they found it would cause terrible heart tremors. So, again, it's behind the counter. You mm-hmm. can just pick it up and buy it yourself. Yeah. The pharmacist is involved in that purchase, and I think they're trying to do a lot more of that because some of the ingredients, unfortunately, in over-the-counter medicines can be mixed to create very strong potent types of drugs. So, pharmacies are aware of this, and they're putting a lot of those ingredients behind the counter.
I remember when the energy drinks first, you know, appeared on the scene, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. And now there are hundreds of the energy drinks available. But what I wanted to address at this point are the names that are used in these drinks, whether it's energy or sports. I mean, for one time, here in Florida, I know they had energy drinks named Hair of the Dog, Cocaine. I'm serious. Cocaine, No Fear. You know, that was some of the energy drinks. And even today, with the sports drinks, Muscle Milk. So if it says right. Muscle yeah. Milk, I mean, that means, wow, it must be good. You know, the message.
There's one of the energy drinks is called Rockstar. Mm-hmm. Well, who doesn't want to be a rock star?
Right, right.
Yeah, and the fellow that developed developed Rockstar is selling his house here in Beverly Hills for $49 million. So. he must have made a few dollars.
Yeah,
selling those drinks.
Yeah, but you know, you put these types of names on the drinks, yeah. and I know I asked a question earlier. Why are they so appealing? But you can see why they're so appealing.
Well, yeah, I mean, just example. You mentioned Muscle Milk. Steph Curry is the sports spokesperson for. Muscle Milk. So mm-hmm. Again, it's got extra proteins and all sorts of additives to it. But there's nothing wrong with milk itself. Just plain old milk is fine. You don't
exactly
doesn't need the extra protein. Just drink the milk.
Right. Well, you know, it's the same kind of thing with vitamins and supplements. You know, they're promoted on the news all the time. I mean, you see it on television. You see it on the internet. Whatever. We don't, if you eat well, if you eat a good balanced meal, you don't need all those vitamins. And all you're doing is just, urinating them out.
That's also true. Yeah,
you know?
Linus Pauling was a big believer in mega doses of vitamin C, mm-hmm. but all of it ended up in the toilet.
Right.
That's the point.
You know, and people don't believe that. They think that they really need these, and they make a difference, and you know the whole effect. And how do you get past that? And I know you can't answer that; that's a rhetorical question. But
yes.
That's the issue.
Well, you know, you see someone like Steph Curry,
mm-hmm.
and a fantastic athlete, and I don't blame him to making a couple extra bucks. But yet, What's in Muscle Milk that's not in regular milk?
Right.
Why would a child need that? Now, if you're an athlete like him and you're playing, a basketball game, maybe you need it. But the average kid down the block doesn't need it.
And that's the point that, you know, I'm trying to convey, that these sports drinks and these energy drinks, nothing beats a well-balanced diet, and most kids just don't need it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking here at the ingredients in Muscle Milk.
Okay, what's
so it's got? It has extra, includes calcium, sodium caseinate, which is a protein, milk protein isolate, which again is a protein, but it also has fructose. So why is there fruit sugar inside of Muscle Milk? So it probably tastes so bad they had to add extra sugar to
it's a sugar.
Again, there's no reason to put sugar in your milk. I've never heard of that, but yet there it is.
But sugar, kids will like it. You'll tend to drink it more. It's sweet.
It's good.
It's sweet.
It's like chocolate milk. Now, chocolate milk's very popular. A lot of school districts were offering chocolate milk because kids didn't like regular milk. Chocolate milk tasted better. But when it came out that there's so much more sugar in the chocolate milk, here in California, they no longer provide chocolate milk. Someone actually got some common sense and took it off the menu.
You tuned in to 411 Teen, and I am talking with Dr. Harold Katz, who joins us from the West Coast. We're talking about sports drinks and energy drinks, and we're going to take a break. But when he comes back, we're going to look at oral health.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and other interested folks. I've been talking with Dr. Harold Katz, dentist, bacteriologist, and developer of oral products. Dr. Katz, let's talk about some oral diseases that are going on in this last segment of the show. I know that oral diseases are a major health problem due to the high incidence and prevalence, particularly with the disadvantaged population. They seem to be affected more than other socioeconomic groups. Would you share with us what are some of the common diseases that are seen in this population?
Well, the most common disease among children today is tooth decay. It's caused by bacteria that live in your mouth. These bacteria process sugars, all sorts of carbohydrates, and they then create lactic acid. That's the acid that actually creates tooth decay.
Okay.
Now, you are correct. Lower socioeconomic strata has twice as many cavities as the rest of the population. And the reason is basically diet. Children who live in those types of populations, parents aren't home. They're working twice as hard as everyone else, it seems, and they end up eating a lot of snack food. That's a big problem. The other problem is regular oral hygiene at home. Children should be brushing their teeth with a fluoride toothpaste twice a day. They should be supervised by an adult to make sure they're brushed properly. When you brush your teeth, always use a soft nylon toothbrush, never a medium or hard brush. Those types of bristles will wear away tooth enamel. And again, use a fluoride toothpaste. When they go to the dentist, which is twice a year, they should have a fluoride treatment done. Fluoride makes the tooth enamel very dense so that it's much more difficult to get tooth decay. And then a fluoride mouthwash at home is an excellent idea. We actually created one. Our company, TheraBreath, has a fluoride. Organic. There's no artificial colors or flavors, no saccharin, no sugar in it. And it's available at Walmart stores. It's called TheraBreath for Kids. And it has the proper amount of fluoride in it. Use it twice a day, and it will prevent cavities as long as they use it. That's what it's for. But again, I'm going to stress drinking water for children. For your babies, don't give them a bottle at night with milk in it. Milk has sugar, natural sugar in it. And if your child has baby teeth, that excess milk that sits in their mouth at night will be processed by the bacteria and create tooth decay. So, again, just real simple things have been proven to work for the past 50 years. Fluoride toothpaste, fluoride mouthwash, brushing twice a day for 2 minutes at a time, and it works wonders. Works for everybody.
When should one have their first dental exam, and when should parents start brushing teeth? It seems like it should start as soon as they get them, but I don't know. When should they start?
Okay. So the first baby teeth usually show up. It's the lower front teeth at about 6 months. I have not yet met the child that can brush their own teeth in 6 months.
No.
But the parent can
brush them.
Wipe it off with a damp cloth.
Okay.
Get some of the plaque that's on there, because even a six-month-old will start to get plaque. That's how bacteria work. But as they progress, they can mimic what the parents are doing, how the parents are brushing their teeth in the morning. The best way to do it, is just to show your kid you're in the bathroom, you're brushing your teeth. You give them a toothbrush and toothpaste and have them brush their teeth along with you. Everybody wants to be their daddy or their mommy growing up. Just do it and they will follow along. The simplest thing, what you don't want to do is scold them if they don't do it right, because they will look at it as a negative. Even going to the dentist should be framed as a positive concept instead of threatening them. I'm going to take you to the dentist, because that kid's going to show up and they're going to be as scared as hell when they show up at the dental office. So you have to make that visit as pleasant as possible. Today, children's dentists, it's almost a pleasure to go there. It's almost like going to Disneyland. They got so many things going on in there. So that's not an issue anymore, going to the dentist as a child. The first visit is usually about 3 or 4 years old.
Okay.
That's when they start to get all the baby teeth are in at that time. The permanent teeth come in at about 6 years old, 6 or 7. And by that time, they should have mastered the concept of brushing their teeth. Flossing is a little bit too complicated, but if children can master brushing, that's all that I ask. Very important. Now, when it comes to diet, what's surprising to me, or what people sort of interpret as healthy snacks, eating fruit is very good. I'm a big believer in fruit, but sticky fruits are a problem. Raisins are a problem. Even these, like, fruit roll-ups, which are sort of dried fruit,
right,
not good, because what typically happens, they do have natural fruit and natural sugars, fructose, but the bacteria don't know the difference between fructose and sucrose or glucose. They will break it down and create the acids. So one of my pet peeves is Halloween time, where that healthy neighbor thinks they're doing the kids a favor. They give them a box of raisins.
Oh,
you're not doing them any favor. Favors. Raisins are not a very good Halloween treat.
What about electric toothbrushes? How effective are they, and when can they use them?
Okay, electric toothbrush is a great idea, because kids tend to enjoy doing it. They, again, they feel like they're an adult. Usually about 6 or 7 years old, they can start to handle it better.
Okay.
Again, very important with electric toothbrush, make sure the bristles are soft nylon. Almost all of them are. And again, just make sure they do it for 2 minutes at a time. There are some out there in the marketplace which have music that runs for 2 minutes, so you know exactly how long to brush. So it's a cute gimmick, but anything to make the kid brush long enough. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the average brushing time in the United States is only 13 seconds.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No.
I did some research for Johnson & Johnson years ago, and it turns out, why do people stop brushing after 13 seconds? It's because almost every toothpaste on the market has an ingredient in it called sodium lauryl sulfate. Now, it sounds like, oh, this is an unbelievable ingredient. It's got three words to it. But it's the chemical term for soap.
But that's what I was just going to say. That's soap, isn't it? Yeah.
So, yeah, it's soap. It's put in the toothpaste to make it
foam up.
And some of the toothpaste have so much of it in there that you end up like a rabid dog after the 13-second point. You spit it out, and once you spit, in your mind, you've told yourself, I'm done brushing. Now, when it comes to children's toothpaste, many of them also have the sodium lauryl sulfate in there, along with many artificial colors and flavors. Mm-hmm. So, again, try to read what the ingredients are. We have a TheraBreath toothpaste, which has no artificial colors or flavors. It does have fluoride and xylitol, but no detergents. Kids love it because it's mild tasting. It won't burn. And that's also available at Walmart stores.
What about Waterpik? I'm going to ask you, dental hygiene 101. Well, I've got you in these last few minutes. But what about Waterpik and irrigation systems? And I know you may not be using them with kids, but I'm thinking even about the parents who may be listening. How do you feel about those?
Oh, they're wonderful. Okay. Anything that makes you clean your teeth better is good.
Okay.
Now, what you have to be a little careful of, if you do have a gum problem, let's say you do have some gum irritation or bleeding gum, mm-hmm. what you don't want to do is crank up the irrigator to the highest setting, because the pressure alone may cause some problem. What they're essentially made to do is clean off any debris. Now, research shows they're almost as good as brushing and flossing, but let's get down to the real basics of oral hygiene. Brushing and flossing mm-hmm. basically do the trick.
Okay.
The irrigators are helpful if you do have an issue and you have difficulty in flossing. Sometimes people are arthritic and they can't get the floss around their fingers.
Mm-hmm.
But again, just brushing and flossing throughout the day. There was actually a research study done in Germany a few years ago, and they did a huge study of different populations, and they found those that flossed twice a day lived 5 years longer.
Oh.
And the reason for that is people of gum disease are much more prone to heart attacks and strokes. Your mouth, once you have bleeding gums, you literally have an open wound site in your mouth. Toxins from bacteria in the mouth can enter the bloodstream, travel to the heart and under the heart valves and cause all sorts of problems. So again, once your gums start to bleed, you're in a position where you really need to do something seriously. Gums are not supposed to bleed. You're not supposed to see mm-hmm. that pink in the sink. So that's a sign to get over to the dentist or a gum specialist to make sure that stops ASAP.
Well, here we go with Madison Avenue. The whiteners. You have to have the whiteners. Your teeth have to be pearly white. Talk about that, please.
Well, there used to be a thing that your teeth were too white, but that doesn't exist anymore.
No.
When I was, let's say, making porcelain veneers for people, and I used to tell them, it looks too white. It looks fake. It looks like you bought it at the local store. Well, maybe you're right, doctor. Make it look a little more natural. But today, we see celebrities with these pure white teeth. It looks ridiculous. But yet, so people go to the drugstore. They'll buy the whitening strips or other whitening types of products. Now, there's nothing wrong with them. They're okay. But it's very important you test it at home first, because human nature is, if it says to leave it on my teeth for 30 minutes, I'm going to leave it on for 3 hours.
Ugh.
It's going to get really white overnight, and I've got my high school reunion tomorrow, and I'm going to look fantastic. Well, if you have sensitivity to the peroxide, which is what the whitening agent is, and if you leave it on for very long, your teeth are going to hurt, and you're going to make up some curse words that no one has ever heard before, because you look at a popsicle, you're going to start screaming. So always test it first for a few minutes. Make sure you don't have any reaction, no sensitivity, because a large part of the population does have a reaction to the peroxide content. So, again, buy it, test it at home. If you have no sensitivity after a couple of minutes, use it a little bit longer and progress to the point where it's recommended on the box. Never use it longer than what's suggested on the box, because they've been tested to make sure they work. You don't want to overdo it, and you can cause some problems that way.
How often should one have their teeth cleaned? I mean, and the dental exam. I mean, can you go and just have your teeth cleaned and not have the dental exam? That's a question that a parent had asked me to share with you.
Things change pretty rapidly mm-hmm. inside the mouth. The general rule is twice a year to have your teeth cleaned and examined. Now, there are some people who produce a lot of plaque and tartar, and they usually get their teeth cleaned sometimes every 3 months. It all depends on the assessment of the dental hygienist or the dentist. But if you do get your teeth cleaned, you should have the dentist check it, because within a 6-month time period, something can go from what we call a watch, when you're watching a tooth to see if it becomes decayed,
mm-hmm.
to actually become fully decayed, end up needing a root canal. And that's something that, even though they're not so painful as they sound, you don't want to go through the process. It's quite expensive and time-consuming. So, again, 6 months is usually the rule.
Share with us, just briefly, I guess, what a dental exam should include.
Oh, okay. So a dental exam, usually it depends how often, but there should be a set of x-rays done.
Okay.
Because dentists do not have x-ray vision. They need the help of a radiograph in order to see what's in between the teeth. There are newer types of machinery which has extremely low doses of radiation.
Mm-hmm.
So not to worry about the radiation level anymore like we used to. The dentist should sit down. If you're an adult, sometimes they will do what's called a periodontal exam to measure how much bone you have lost in between the teeth. That'll give you some idea of the stage that your mouth is in. Children suffer from tooth decay, but after the age of 21, the largest problem that adults face as far as oral health is gum disease. More people are lost to gum disease than to tooth decay today. So we sort of have tackled tooth decay somewhat with the use of fluoride. The next battle when it comes to oral health is gum disease. It's still a problem. So again,
what causes gum disease?
What causes
gum disease?
Well, it's caused by bacteria. Bacteria that are in between the teeth. They start to eat away the gum tissue. Gums start to bleed. Another set of bacteria get under the gum line and start to eat away at the surrounding bone.
Mm.
Your teeth, the roots of your teeth are embedded in bone. There's tiny ligaments which connect the root to the bone. But over time, if those bacteria get underneath there, they literally eat away the supporting tissue. The teeth start to become loose. You may notice that when you're eating a certain way that the bite is not quite right. Again, that's a sign to get over to the dentist because you may be in the first steps of gum disease. In some cases, you may need a limited orthodontia. There are new processes now, the Invisalign, which is a simpler way to do orthodontia for some people that can help align the teeth so your bite is much straighter, keeps the teeth aligned better, can help to prevent gum disease in some cases. And then you can be evaluated for oral cancer. There's many tests that can be done very simply in the office. First of all, there's a visual test that most dentists will do on the first visit for oral cancer. If you have a history of smoking, that could be a sign that you're prone to having oral cancer issues, even on the tongue. So most dentists will do a complete examination, not just of the teeth, but of the gums, all the soft tissue, the palate, and the tongue, and then to do a health history. I know many times I've come across patients and sort of have found out that they may be diabetic. They weren't even aware of that because they're thirsty all the time. They're prone to have bad breath and dry mouth. So, again, the dentist can do quite a bit of diagnosis that your physician may have missed because sometimes the physician is a little bit too busy and looking for specific problems. The dentist, through just a general health history and oral exam, can pick up things that your physician may have missed.
And dental care is so important. Yet when we look at insurance, it seems like it's the first thing that is eliminated.
It's sort of, I don't know what they call it, the red-headed stepchild.
Mm-hmm.
Of
it's
a problem because your mouth is the gateway to the rest of your body. And over and over and over, there are studies which show that people who have oral diseases are much more prone to other systemic diseases. Everything goes hand in hand. And the fact that many oral bacteria end up in different parts of the body. Just as an example, the University of North Carolina did a study and showed that pregnant women who had bleeding gums were 7 times more likely to give birth to premature low birth weight babies. So here's a case of if pregnant women had better oral health, they would end up giving birth to healthier babies. So
oral
hygiene should be part of the overall health coverage.
Well, we are out of time. And Dr. Katz, it has been super. I have enjoyed talking with you. You have been so very informative. So again, thank you so much. My listening audience, much appreciation for your time and the privilege of your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollifield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.